The following podcast is sponsored by English Heritage. Let English Heritage support you and your class this term with a unique and memorable school trip. From the Stone Age to the Cold War, discover any of their 400 properties and let your students stand at the places where history happened. Find out more at english-heritage.org.uk/learn/school-visits.
Hello and welcome to this bonus edition of the TES podcast. I'm senior editor Simon Locke, and today I'll be looking at the well-being benefits that come with embarking on a school trip. School trips offer students a wealth of opportunity, whether it be testing out newly acquired language skills overseas or simply a chance to explore some local heritage a little closer to home. But could they also help schools to boost pupil mental health, something that is clearly much needed following prolonged periods of lockdown and isolation? According to NHS data, the prevalence of mental health conditions in young people is at an all-time high, with around 1 in 6 children aged 5 to 16 thought to be suffering from a probable mental disorder. So could venturing out of the classroom offer a way to stop these types of disorders taking hold or developing into something more serious? To help us answer this question today, I'm joined by Sam Salito, who's head teacher at Queensgate Primary on the Isle of Wight, and Lauren Cross, who is a former teacher and current research assistant at the University of Cambridge. Hi both, thank you very much for joining me on this edition of the TES podcast. We are here to talk about probably one of the formative experiences of any child's time in education, the school trip, which can range from, you know, an overseas expedition to just walking down to your local church or gallery. Don't think it's the scale, it's more the sort of experience that you get from these things. And we're going to dig into those today and look at especially the mental health benefits. Guests, I was going to ask you to kick off with any sort of lasting memories from your own school trips when you were younger. Lauren, have you got anything that sort of sticks in the memory?
Oh, goodness. I think so many fond memories when it comes to school trips. I think the one which really sticks in my mind, however, is quite a simple one. And that literally was when I was at primary school. I think it's my first memory of a school trip. And we literally just went round the local area and looked at some of the buildings and shops. But I can remember that being just so exciting. And me and my sister still go around and point out things which we kind of established on that school trip. So it's very much had a lasting impact on me.
Oh, lovely. How about you, Sam?
So I grew up in Bury St Edmunds in Suffolk, and I went to a middle school. And just thinking about my favourite trip, it was a residential trip in what was called top year of middle school. So I was probably about 13. And it was a trip to Bath, Wookie Hole, just fantastic memories, like going to the bath in Bath, but also all the social side of it. And I think I got my first boyfriend actually in Bath.
Wow. Okay. That's a good one. So obviously the sort of sad thing is that these sorts of trips and experiences have been pretty limited over the last 2 years, if not, you know, completely unavailable for obvious reasons. And it's a time at which children's mental health has particularly been under the spotlight. And we're not here to draw a direct comparison or correlation between those two things, but there's definitely elements that you two have talked about, you know, the socialization and just getting out of the classroom that have probably played a part. Lauren, have you come across any research that suggests, you know, young people's mental health might have suffered due to some of these reasons?
Yeah, so I think one of the best resources we have to understand what children and young people's mental health looks like are the results from the Mental Health of Children and Young People survey. And this is a really big national survey conducted in England with data collected in 2017, 2020 and 2021 from both children and young people and their parents. And looking at this data, there is some kind of concerning evidence to suggest that children and young people's mental health does appear to have declined over the past 2 years. So in 2020 and 2021, 1 in 6 people were thought to have a probable mental health disorder. And that's compared to 1 in 9 in 2017. Now, as Simon has kind of already alluded to, it's really difficult to say for certain exactly why we have seen this decline during this time period. But one big thing which we do know has happened are those lockdowns and school closures. And for lots of young people, that was associated with a loss of extracurricular activities and certainly spending a lot more time indoors. But of course, everyone's experience is different, and we do need more research to understand these experiences and know exactly for sure that relationship.
Of course, yeah. Sam, is that something that sort of resonates with you and your experience over the last couple of years? Have you seen evidence to suggest sort of mental health issues creeping in, or is it sort of too early to say?
Oh, no. Yes, definitely. I mean, the vast majority of children have come back into the school ready for their learning and fine, but there is a significant percentage who have struggled to come back into school and then have struggled to take part in some of the activities within school as well. We have got more school refusers than we had previously. We've got more children showing signs of anxiety. We've got children struggling with worries. I think there's a whole raft of layers around that. And certainly those numbers like 1 in 9, 1 in 6 that Lauren was talking about, I would say that is absolutely how it is here in terms of the increase.
Yeah, of course, children probably coming back into school with lots of different experiences. Obviously, you know, 2 years of no school trips, we're not saying is the cause, but actually perhaps now giving those children those experiences again as things start to open up might help alleviate some of those issues. Lauren, what are the sorts of well-being benefits that come with getting children out on a school trip?
Well, there's evidence to suggest that, yeah, trips can be hugely important for children and young people's well-being. But I think the thing to acknowledge first is that school trips serve different purposes. And so the benefits attached and what your students might get out of them are going to be different. For example, we know that for some, learning in traditional classroom settings can pose challenges. So having an opportunity to move learning forward or engage with a topic in a different setting or by a different medium can be really powerful. Equally, a school trip might have nothing to do with the acquisition of knowledge, but tap into those interpersonal skills, pushing students out of their comfort zone, learning and helping them to feel comfortable with taking age-appropriate risks, building connections with peers. And of equal importance, I think, can be a really powerful tool as a teacher to also build that relationship and open those channels of communication with your students. And all of these things are factors which come up time and time again in terms of research as really important factors which contribute to optimal well-being. So it might not be that the intention of the trip was to boost well-being. I think it's quite often an added bonus or a side kind of impact of a trip. However, I will also caveat this with the fact that there is also some evidence to suggest that trips can also be a source of stress in themselves, whether this is due to a break in routine, kind of issues of access to coping mechanisms, support structures, change of surroundings or even fears associated with kind of economic differences. So I think when reflecting on the literature, understanding people's needs and making sure trips are inclusive spaces is really important too.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I guess like with a lot of things in school settings, finding things that work for every single pupil is very difficult. That's really interesting. That's good to know that, you know, you might not go into planning a school trip with wellbeing in mind, but actually it's a sort of a happy byproduct. That's great. Sam, what do you sort of think about when you're planning a school trip? Is that something that sort of, yeah, again, is that resonate with how you go about things?
Yeah, we actually at Queensgate think school trips are really important. We're lucky enough to have what we call an out and about teacher who is here for 2 days a week. So how this came about is that the teachers have PPA time to do their planning, and we've employed other people to give the children rich experiences while the teachers are doing that. So Becca is our out and about teacher, and basically, we deliver an out and about curriculum which offers all children throughout the school regular opportunities to get out on the minibus, take part in a variety of experiences across the Isle of Wight. And this started as three strands: maritime, heritage, and environment, because the Isle of Wight is so rich in those areas. But then we needed some extra work with our writing. So this was giving children real opportunities for writing. And then we were finding our children needed more vocabulary given to them. So the teacher gives the vocabulary while they're out and about, and it helps with their vocabulary acquisition. And then, of course, over the last couple of years, it's been very much about well-being, mental health, getting out in the fresh air, getting the children away from the screens, boosting self-esteem, confidence, providing, like Lauren was saying, a less traditional learning environment where children can really, you know, grow into being leaders. Even children with special needs, they behave quite differently when they're out and about. A lot of our families don't have access to a car, and some children have limited experience out of school. So the pedagogy of Queensgate is to take a holistic approach to the children's learning and value the children's strengths and quality of life. And we do often find, actually, that those that struggle academically in class can thrive outside, leading groups, orienteering, doing map reading, going on a hike, looking at local history, working with animals on a farm, you know. So list is endless, really. But we're definitely seeing good benefits, I would say, from that.
Brilliant. Yeah, I like the sound of that role, the out and about teacher. That sounds like something I might consider applying for.
It's like the ideal job.
Sounds like a dream. Yeah, what Lauren was saying about the sort of inclusivity element and making sure, you know, all pupils are sort of having the best experience possible. Do you find some people sort of take to these types of experience more than others?
So it's very much part of our school culture. The children from the age of 4, when they come in reception, are timetabled on the bus to go out and about. It very much feeds into their topics that they're learning about. I mean, the thing that we've done at Queensgate, we do have quite a high deprivation area. We do have quite a lot of children on free school meals. So the school is funding this. The school funds the bus, the school funds the teacher, and all of these trips are free. That's because we think it's incredibly important. And even during lockdown times, we've got a setup here of a forest school, and we were ensuring that the children in school did get out and about as best they could, which was on site in our forest school as well, for these very reasons about well-being, that sense of belonging, working with the children's curiosity and inquisitiveness. You know, so it be honest with you, it's pretty much part and parcel here. So, you know, we don't feel that, we think it's quite inclusive.
So in terms of the sort of beginning to end planning of a school trip for you, Sam, what how does that process go about? What are the sort of hurdles that you have to think of, especially thinking about sort of perhaps pupil well-being as well?
Okay, so we have a trips checklist that we follow. Obviously, there needs to be a risk assessment. We call it risk benefit here. So we're always looking at the benefits for the children rather than the kind of obstacles. The strategic side, obviously, you have to do the planning with the budget and that side of things. But then the actual trips themselves, we've got a curriculum map, and the trips tie in with that curriculum map. So the idea is that they enhance the experiences that the children are having in the classroom. So, for example, if they are learning about milk production, the children might go along to Briddlesford Farm and see that for themselves. You know, if they're going, they're working on environment, they might go and do a litter pick and then bring the litter back and analyze that and look at the effects of that. So basically the trips all tie into the curriculum. I guess I'm lucky because I've got someone who does that. You know, that is her job, make sure that that's happening. So it's good.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. And you say the trips all sort of tie into the curriculum. Is the sort of balancing of academic outcomes, I guess, with sort of children being able to enjoy themselves, is that something that's on the table, or does that all just neatly mesh together?
I guess there is a challenge around time in the sense of how much time are we giving to reading, writing, maths, those basics. But I really see the trips out and the out and about as enhancing that. So I think there's quite a few layers here. First of all, how do children make progress? They need to be in school. Their attendance needs to be good. The children absolutely love out and about. They want to be in school because they want to be going on these trips. You know, we get children talking about how much they love nature, about how they love fresh air, how they love learning outside. They even talk actually about how it makes you have a happy mood. Now, my very strong feeling about this is that if you've got children who are happy to come to school, they're having those good experiences and they've got a happy mood, then they are in a much better place learning. So I think that the mental health, the physical health, and the academic life of the school are entwined. And I very much see this as enhancing. If Ofsted was to talk to me about the time spent doing it, I would be very happy to talk about the benefits of that for the children's mental, physical health. That then enables them to focus on their academic studies. Some of that's built in, you know, because it's writing opportunity. But also our out and about teacher often takes books out with her as well to do stories sort of out in nature as well. And we encourage our staff on site to do outdoor learning too. So, no, I really feel that it enhances and is a benefit to the academic side.
Do you think there is, again, a byproduct of school trips in terms of thinking about the mental health and well-being impact on the teachers and those kind of leading the trips? Because we know, again, that the mental health of a teacher can influence the mental health and well-being of their students. So I'd just be really interested to get your perspective on that.
Yeah, I think when you're out on a school trip with a group of children, the relationship is on a different level to teacher in a class being driven by a learning objective. So I think it relaxes and enhances those relationships between teachers and children. I think incidental conversation happens much more readily when you're on the bus or you're walking on the beach. And I think that that is a real positive around the relationships. And then you've had that experience, haven't you? You, the teacher and the child have had those experiences together that they can then draw on. I think that's, yeah, I think it improves moods for teachers too, most definitely. I think it makes for a more relaxed environment to learn in. And I think there's that sort of connectivity between the teachers out on the trip and the children and those shared experiences.
Sam, have you seen sort of children perhaps with SEND issues who've come out of their shell a little bit more, like you're saying about that teacher-pupil relationship and how that changes outside of the classroom? Is that something that you've seen be particularly successful?
Yes, definitely. So I'll give you one example, although there's many. We had a child with an education healthcare plan who really, really struggled in school, but was able to lead a hike and do some like orienteering, was really, really good at that and was able to encourage and talk to the other children about it. So it really changed their standing, I guess, within the group.
Brilliant. Yeah. So Sam, outside of mental health for the minute, thinking about, you know, the last couple of years and where some students have fallen behind and others haven't, is it difficult to sort of justify a school trip, or do you think there's a wider importance in catching students up and bridging that gap?
I think that's a really interesting question, actually, because perhaps people are taking quite a narrow view to catch up, being like one-on-one or small group with a teacher being drilled. Actually, our program of visit aims to support cultural capital. It aims to bridge the gap for our disadvantaged children. You know, the trips are accessed by all, but there's other ways to catch up, isn't there? And there's that bit about taking that moment and enjoying life, enjoying where you are, taking those deep breaths in nature. I think that that's going to help you catch up as much as being in a classroom with a teacher. I just think it's a different way of looking at it. Hugely important that our children can function in all sorts of settings, isn't it? So, you know, I'd almost twist that onto its head and say, really, for these children to catch up, they need to be getting out and about again.
Getting back to the research then, if we can for a second, Lauren, what if someone was designing a sort of a model school trip, if you like, what sort of things do you think would be good to sort of consider if they were really getting sort of maximum mental health benefit, do you think?
So this probably, I'm going to say two things, which I think are probably quite obvious or sound quite obvious, but a trip needs to have a clear purpose and be meaningful in order to have an impact. But that purpose itself can be big or small. So whether it is kind of traveling across the globe or 5 minutes from your kind of school and site to get to know your local area, it really doesn't matter. And again, in terms of what research tells us about what children need to improve their well-being, well, it comes back to an understanding of the unique needs, challenges, and experiences of your student population and what might benefit them most. So there really is no one-size-fits-all kind of solution which I can offer. But I think teachers are possibly best placed to navigate some of those nuances and really know their student population in terms of thinking about what do these students need most in order to kind of promote health and well-being.
Lovely stuff. Is that something, Sam, is that something that sort of feels familiar to you. Do you sort of set out with a purpose? What does sort of planning a school trip look like?
Yeah, always has a purpose. As I said, it ties in with the curriculum. It is to enhance and give the children extra experiences around that particular curriculum area, whether that's history, geography, or it might be an English, it might be an art-based trip, you know, focusing on creativity. So every trip will have a learning intention connected to it. The teachers are very clear of the purpose of the trip. I mean, sometimes a class trip might be after some teaching and learning. So maybe in design technology, they've designed fairground rides or you know, like adventure park rides. Well, then the children may go out and experience that kind of thing in the real life. So they're having lots of fun, but it's actually tied in with their DT, you see. So yeah, absolutely. Always good to have a purpose. I agree with that completely.
Brilliant. And just, I thought, just finish with, I know sort of anecdotally, I've heard schools over the past sort of 18 months, 2 years have just put in a sort of bit of a blanket ban on school trips in the thinking that COVID restrictions, probably staffing issues at the moment have made it untenable. Do you two have some sort of closing rallying cry, words of advice for teachers out there who might be sort of on the fence about school trips? Sam, what do you think?
I mean, for me, it's been paramount. You know, as I said, even during lockdown, when we had the key workers, children on site, we were still doing a lot of our learning outside in a part of our school called The Patch. Actually, while we've been open, you can take, I mean, we've moved beyond bubbles now, but even in the time of bubbles, you can take a bubble on a minibus as long as the windows are open, which is what we did. And you can still give the children those great experiences. I mean, I guess one last thing that I haven't mentioned yet, but I feel really strongly about, is that connectivity to your local area. So for us, the Isle of Wight. But this is about children not just having home and school. This is about them understanding their locality, where they live, what their locality has to offer them. I think it's about being something bigger than just themselves, their family and their school. It's about connecting to the wider community. So anybody who is not yet doing trips because of COVID, I would urge you most definitely to pick that up again, get those children out. I really think that it will help with other issues such as attendance that we are having problems with in schools at the moment.
I completely agree. I also think that with COVID and the situation of school closures, and particularly for older students, a lot of the focus is very much on academic catch-up. But I think also using trips as a breath, and whether that is an opportunity to kind of experience something different, to promote well-being, to process perhaps some of the events of the couple of years, just having that change of scene, I think is really, really important when we're thinking about recovery as well. And yeah, just making sure we are optimizing the mental health of our students, because again, if we think about the research, happier students are in a better space to learn. Really important.
Yeah, definitely. A nice point to finish on. I like the idea of you packing all your students onto the school bus with coats and scarves at the moment and getting them back out there. That's great. Guys, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate you joining me.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Simon.
This podcast was sponsored by English Heritage. Let English Heritage support you and your class this term. with a unique and memorable school trip. From the Stone Age to the Cold War, discover any of their 400 properties and let your students stand at the places where history happened. Find out more at english-heritage.org.uk/learn/school-visits.